please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Given that the Biden administration has continued the Trump administration policy of closing the traditional route of asking for asylum at ports of entry, asylum seekers took to the river, setting the stage for compelling video footage of large groups of immigrants turning themselves in at the border fence in Del Rio. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Michelle Garcia, reporter. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Border Authorities Failed to Prepare for Influx of Migrants Despite Weeks of Warnings. Stay tuned for more. By the time word spread that up to 15,000 mostly Haitian migrants had been detained under the international bridge in Del Rio, the small Texas border town had become occupied territory. A helicopter hovered over the Rio Grande. State troopers swarmed the river and were stationed every half mile along the surrounding roads. A tense city of military and law enforcement personnel had sprouted up on city-owned land on the south side of the border wall, near the makeshift camp where the Haitians slept. Inside the camp, in the dirt and the heat, pregnant women went into labor. 4 years ago, Republicans and Democrats linked arms with residents from both sides of the border to form a human chain across the bridge in show of unity. Yet, in recent weeks, Del Rio has become a theater for a dramatic show of violence and force as mounted border patrol agents charged at Haitian migrants while twirling their reins like whips. Some 2,300 law enforcement officers said Mayor Bruno Lozano had been dispatched to Val Verde County, home to roughly 49,000 residents. One of the residents said, "I don't feel it's in anybody's best interest to come in mass movement like that," adding that it creates security vulnerabilities elsewhere. "If this is going to continue to be our response, it's not a good precedent." Outside a shelter operated by Val Verde Humanitarian Border Coalition, a local man carrying a holstered firearm said he was providing security to protect Haitians from hostile residents and outsiders. When Al Sharpton attempted to hold a media event near the border wall in solidarity with the Haitian migrants, he was shouted down by men who accused him of spreading racism. Volunteers in Del Rio collected donations and set out refreshments and snacks for state troopers. Overwhelmed was the word repeatedly used by federal, state, and local officials to describe border patrol agents who officials said were caught by surprise and unable to address the influx of Haitian migrants. But the arrival of Haitians was anticipated, and much of the chaos that ensued seemed preventable with basic planning and logistics. But in the scramble to contain the media crisis, the U.S. employed tactics that set off a cascade of repression and violence on both sides of the border. By allowing the situation to reach critical levels, federal officials created conditions that made a militarized crackdown seem inevitable, making criminals out of people, asserting that their right to seek asylum. Almost 30,000 migrants, mostly Haitians, were encountered in Del Rio after September 9th, said Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas in a briefing, and more than 12,000 will have their cases heard by an immigration judge. But more than 5,000 of those asylum seekers have been deported to Haiti just weeks after the U.S. extended and expanded temporary protected status of the country. As Mayorkas stated in May, Haiti is currently experiencing serious security concerns, social unrest, an increase in human rights abuses, crippling poverty, and lack of basic resources, which are exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Wade McMullen, an attorney at RFK Human Rights, who traveled to Del Rio, said, "The arrival of vulnerable asylum seekers is not a crisis. The militarized response and lack of preparation, that's the crisis." Days after Border Patrol agents on horseback charged at Haitian migrants, Texas Governor Greg Abbott made full request of the mayor to authorize state troopers to enter the city property to arrest the Haitian for criminal trespassing. A spokesperson for Abbott did not answer questions about the governor's request to conduct the arrest. After a massive deployment involving the Coast Guard, Texas National Guard, state troopers including air and marine support, and Customs and Border Protection, on September 24th, officials announced that Haitians were no longer under the bridge. After weeks of a growing encampment and worsening conditions, everyone had been cleared out in mere days. The aggressive response in Del Rio underscores an immigration system that prioritizes the spectacle of force over an investment in the construction of systems needed to process asylum seekers to conform to obligations dictated by international and U.S. law. Officials left little doubt that what the aggressive deployment was designed to send a message of deterrence to others who might also seek asylum. What we start doing to Haitians tends to spill over to everyone else, said Yael Schacher, an immigration historian and senior advocate with Refugees International. In 1980s, after the U.S. had experimented with imposing detention on Haitians, the policy was expanded to Central Americans fleeing U.S.-backed wars. County Judge Louis Owens, the top administrator of Val Verde County, described the state and federal law enforcement deployment as amazing. He said, "We want to lean on law enforcement to stop the flow." That said, there has to be a process to ask for asylum. Despite claims that border officials were caught off guard, signs of the impending arrival of a large number of asylum seekers were not hard to find. In the Del Rio area, the number of encounters with migrants had increased in 2021 over the prior year, with the numbers spiking over 1,000% by May, according to Customs and Border Protection data. In May, Lozano, a Democrat, met with congressional Republicans and appeared on Fox News complaining about illegals in Townsend, criticizing the Biden administration for a lack of response at the border. He said, "Unfortunately, at the time, it was only right-wing media groups like Fox News that were telling the story," adding that the policy needs to be reformed so ports of entry have to take them in legally and not be criminally charged. 2 months later, Border Patrol agents detained hundreds of people from various countries under the bridge in Del Rio. Meanwhile, a video that captured Mexican immigration officials brutalizing Haitian migrants who were headed north circulated online. The Spanish newspaper El País reported that Haitian claims for asylum in Mexico had reached a record high. By September, Mexico had received 19,000 petitions for asylum, higher than any other nationality, following a trend of Haitians transiting through Mexico that began 2 years ago. Even so, the United States officials repeatedly claimed that the arrival of Haitians on the border was a surprise. Given that the Biden administration has continued the Trump administration policy of closing the traditional route of asking for asylum at ports of entry, asylum seekers took to the river, setting the stage for compelling video footage of large groups of immigrants turning themselves in at the border fence in Del Rio, exciting viewers of Fox and Newsmax. In early August, George Ventura, a contributor to the right-wing Daily Caller, interviewed Del Rio residents about the crisis. Around this time, said Owens, the Judge County authorities were informed that caravans of some 25,000 people were expected to arrive on the border.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The biggest ever data leak in history has exposed hidden offshore assets worth millions of dollars, allegedly tied to 35 current and former world leaders and more than 300 other public officials from over 90 countries. Nearly 3 terabytes of data, dubbed the Pandora Papers, were leaked to the Washington-based International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. Over 600 journalists helped review 12 million documents leaked from 14 financial services companies. Jordan's King Abdullah, a close U.S. ally, was reported to have used offshore accounts to spend more than $100 million on luxury homes in the United Kingdom and the United States. The papers also accused the family and close associates of Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev of corruption, suggesting that they've traded close to £400 million in UK property over the past 15 years through a network of offshore firms. The papers have also implicated the Czech Prime Minister, presidents of Ukraine, Cyprus, Kenya, and former British Prime Minister Tony Blair, among other high-profile figures.
Because people don't want to solve it. It's very simple. I mean, first of all, bear in mind, the central banks around the globe have opened up their money spigots to extraordinary levels since the 2008 financial crisis. So as a result, you have tons and tons and tons of capital circulating around the world, unregulated, looking for the highest profit levels, etc. And the banking sectors are making lots and lots of money over this.
While having offshore firms and accounts isn't illegal, the papers allege that some of the companies have helped officials hide their wealth, practically enabling them to evade paying taxes, while some others have used them for money laundering and other fraudulent financial schemes. According According to the Pandora Papers, over a dozen U.S. states are providing financial secrecy services that rival those of offshore tax havens in Europe and the Caribbean region. The documents single out South Dakota, which has allegedly sheltered billions of dollars in assets linked to people previously accused of financial crimes. The investigation says South Dakota state lawmakers have adopted lax regulations drafted by trust industry insiders, measures that have quadrupled customers' trust in the state compared to 10 years ago. Some of the trusts cited in the probe are linked to people accused of human rights and labor abuses. The revelations come despite President Joe Biden's pledge that Washington will lead the efforts internationally to promote financial transparency and fight against corruption.
Now, the U.S., for example, talks about equalizing tax rates, shutting down tax havens, et cetera, but in fact, individual U.S. states have been opening their doors wider and wider to these kinds of activities. South Dakota is one example, Nevada is another, and a third is Delaware, a small state on the East Coast, which is home to Joe Biden. And Joe Biden's history, he essentially is a product of this anything-goes, hot-money corporate culture.
The rich and powerful people cited in the large-scale investigation have already begun to deny wrongdoings and in some cases express readiness to undergo scrutiny. What's for certain is that they have a lot to answer for in their respective countries for the months or even years to come.
Iran has long voiced concern over the covert presence of Israeli regime's proxies as well as Daesh terrorists near its northwestern borders. Tehran says the terrorists were brought into the region at the height of the 2020 conflicts between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Iran particularly accuses Israel of hatching plots in order to sow discord among Muslim nations, saying the regime sees its survival through creating insecurity. On Friday, Iran's army ground force launched a military drill codenamed Khaybar near the country's border with Azerbaijan and Armenia. The drill was attended by armored, artillery, drone, and electronic warfare units with aerial support from the Army's Airborne Division. Islamic Republic's armed forces regularly hold military exercises to increase their military prowess and preparedness. The drills also send a clear and powerful message to enemies against any acts that challenge Iran's security, sovereignty, and territorial integrity. On Sunday, during a virtual ceremony held for graduates of military academies in the capital, Tehran, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, warned countries against the consequences of relying on foreign powers to guarantee their security. Ayatollah Khamenei said the interference of foreign actors in the region is a source of discord and damage, calling on the regional states to follow the example of Iran for power and rationality.
Israel considers Iran its mortal enemy and will do whatever it can to strengthen any of Iran's neighbors and to try to draw them away from any kind of alliance with Iran. So that's partly what this is all about. Now, Iran, of course, has every right to have military exercises in any part of its country that it wants to. So the fact that it's having them in its northern border near Azerbaijan is not surprising.
Iran has long criticized Azerbaijan's military ties with Israel, which include purchases of Israeli arms such as drones and other weapons that help Baku gained the upper hand in the war with Armenia last year. According to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute think tank, Israel provided Azerbaijan with some $825 million in weapons between 2006 and 2019. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has expressed Tehran's concern about Israel and terrorist elements threatening the security of neighboring Azerbaijan. The Iranian diplomat highlighted the importance of mutual relations between Tehran and Baku in the context of neighborly relations, and expressed dismay over the recent negative statements by the Republic of Azerbaijan. Last week, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps held a separate military exercise in the northwestern province of Ardabil. The drill drew criticism from Azerbaijan's president, Ilham Aliyev, who said it was surprised by Iran's decision since it hadn't held maneuvers in the region for about 3 decades. However, Iran's foreign ministry reacted to Aliyev's remarks, saying the drill was meant to secure regional peace and security. Iran's foreign minister said Tehran will not tolerate Israel's presence near the country's borders and will take due measures against the regime's activities.
United States and Israel support anti-Iran terrorist groups. The United States openly supports the MEK, which is an anti-Iranian terrorist group. So the goal, of course, is to start a war that the Israeli regime and the U.S. regime would be able to say is the responsibility of Iran. This is not the case at all.
But why should Tehran hold a grudge against Tel Aviv? It has been an open secret that Israel, along with the United States, have been responsible for several instances of acts of sabotage against Iran's civilian nuclear program over the past decade. Also, Iran blames Israel and the U.S. for assassinating its top nuclear scientists in order to hamper its eye-catching advances. Israel also sees this as an opportunity to act against Iran militarily, although indirectly. Any moves that prompt secession from Iranian territory is something Israel welcomes. Yet, in Iran's eyes, that is just a pipe dream, as relayed through its military exercises. The Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has also said that holding military exercises by a state within its territory is part of its national sovereignty. The January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol during the Congress meeting to certify Joe Biden's presidential election victory revealed the deep division within the American society and political system. Now, months after the incident, a new poll has showcased the extreme divisions between the two major U.S. political parties that are Democrats and Republicans. To find out how deep the divisions run, the University of Virginia Center for Politics and Project Home Fire surveyed 2012 voters during the summer. Half of the participants had voted for Donald Trump, and the other half for President Joe Biden. Not surprisingly, the results showed a country at ideological war with itself. The responses supporting the idea of forming two new countries out of red and blue states range from at least somewhat agree to strongly agree. Indeed, 52% of Trump voters and 41% of Biden voters expressed support for cleaving the country along political lines. The poll also found that 80% or more of both Biden and Trump voters fear the effects of the other party's policies. As a matter of fact, they said the opposing side presents a clear and present danger to American democracy. In addition, roughly 2 in 10 Trump and Biden voters strongly agreed with the idea of a president bypassing Congress or courts to take needed actions.
The real issue here is the weakening of democracy in the first place, which helps support or enable these notions of secession or mutual hatred.
Furthermore, a June poll found voters saw political division as the top issue the United States faces, beating out the COVID-19 pandemic, healthcare, and economic issues. If not dealt with properly and swiftly, the extreme division in the U.S. could turn into a full-blown crisis with dangerous ramifications. It could lead to incidents such as the January 6th attack on Capitol. On that day, a large number of Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol, where the U.S. Congress was meeting to certify Biden's presidential election win. Over 500 people have been arrested in connection with the attack.
Also, about 140 officers from both the Capitol Police and the DC Department were injured. 4 people died in the attack, including a senior police officer. The U.S. also faces another challenge that is gaining steam, a national divorce. A Texas pro-independence group named the Texas Nationalist Movement is trying to push a referendum vote on the independence of the state, dubbed Texit. Also, support for the secession of California from the U.S., named Calexit, is rising. As of September 2020, the California pro-independence groups got approval again to collect petition signatures.
It's dangerous because what you have is one-third of the population who are increasingly convinced that the government is illegitimate. And when you have that, you also now have the mobilization of a section of these people to attack the very instruments of government.
Violence and secession are two probable outcomes of the continuation of the current trend within the U.S. political system. It's high time Washington came up with a plan to heal its fractured democracy, or watch its house of cards burn gradually.
The United States has seen several high-profile incidents of police violence and brutality in recent years, whose victims are mostly members of minority communities in America. The death of African-American George Floyd in May 2020 sparked a new wave of widespread protests not only in the U.S., but across the whole world. Following the incidents, a group of researchers has collected data about police killings in America over the span of about 40 years. The study published in the peer-reviewed Lancet Journal has found glaring discrepancies between figures reported by a governmental database and those compiled by open-source databases. According to the article, over half of all police-involved killings in the country have been either misclassified or unreported. Moreover, the researchers found that the governmental database misclassified nearly 60% of all fatal police encounters involving African Americans. The database is also reported to have missed 50% of all police-involved deaths of Hispanic people. The disproportionate police targeting of African Americans has been highlighted in previous research. However, the latest meta-analysis is considered as having the longest study period to date. Possible conflicts of interest have also been cited in the extensive research, as the authors noted that investigators are embedded inside police departments and can be discouraged from determining that the deaths are caused by police violence.
The U.S. government, the Department of Justice, the bureaucracies within the U.S. state are going to do everything they can to hide these because it's already bad, and the U.S. wants to maintain its veneer of being a progressive, awoke, a haven of social justice in the international community.
The paper highlighted the importance of increased use of open-source data collection to investigate acts of discrimination by the U.S. police. Targeted changes to policing and safety protocols were also cited as possible solutions to the increasingly pressing problem. In reality, however, many U.S. politicians seem to remain opposed to such changes. Last month, bipartisan talks in the United States Senate for a police reforms bill broke down without a deal. The bill was passed in the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives in March. The reforms, dubbed the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, were proposed following the death of the African-American man at the hands of a white Minneapolis officer last year. The law would have banned chokeholds and qualified immunity for law enforcement. President Joe Biden accused Republicans of rejecting even modest reform.
They have something in stake in, you know, arresting disproportionately African-American communities. They have something in stake, be it personal prejudice or be it economic gain.
In such a political climate, the rising trend of killings isn't likely to be reversed anytime soon. That won't be good news for President Biden, who has a strong base of black voters.
Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Back to Reality on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And we are here sitting in the studio with two of my friends, and let me ask them actually to introduce themselves.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Habib, at your service from California of the United States of America, most expensive state in the United States actually.
I see.
At your service.
Okay, thank you very much. And brother?
Assalamu alaikum, Muzaffar Haider here from the UK.
Oh, great. I always think of life as somewhere like a steep. We are not looking at some level ground, all right, which is flat.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, either you have to go up the mountain or come down the mountain or the hill. And usually when you want to do good things, the first thing that comes to mind is that it takes more energy and time and effort and patience to go up the mountain, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But coming down, you can even roll down, you know? It's like very, very easy, like in comparison with climbing up the mountain, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it, or why is life is like this? We also have it like in one of the, which we call it, the principles which are available in Islamic culture, is that you need to invite people to the good, all right?
Yeah.
As if it needs some kind of a push, isn't it, like this?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we do see that in life there are peaks and troughs. You're going up sometimes, you're coming down sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes it's very difficult to achieve what we want to achieve, and sometimes it's very easy.
Mm-hmm.
This is the system that Allah has created, and incidentally there's a verse in the Quran that says, very few of my servants attempt the uphill struggle.
Yes.
You know, and he's urging human beings, attempt that struggle, because victory lies at the top of that hill. It's going to be difficult.
Yes.
And then he says, "Inna ma'al usri yusra."
Surely
with difficulty is ease. You know, if anybody out there, and I'm telling this to the young brothers out there especially, and sisters, that if anybody is telling you, just chill out, take it easy, don't worry about it, kick back and relax, and they never push you to achieve, this person is not actually your friend. There's a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says, your true friend is the one who tells you your flaws.
Right.
You might hate that person because you don't like people telling you your flaws. But when that person does that in private, inshallah, it compels you to be better. And it makes you aware that you have a flaw that you want to overcome. So when it comes to the idea of enjoining good in the society,
yes,
it's a very important thing.
Yes.
If we're not pushing others to be better, we should know that we're not actually being friends to them.
I want to comment on that. And because you're a linguistic and you like linguistic things, right? He said that the true sadiq wa adu, the base of the words sadiq is the one, it comes from sidq, from truthfulness. The reason why a person is a sadiq or a friend is because he is truthful towards you and towards your path. And adu man i'tada, who hurts you. And the person that puts you astray from your goal and from your missions is adu. I'tada alayk, he has harassed you, he has hurt you. That's the reason why they call a sadiq sadiq and a adu adu. Because a sadiq yazduqaka fil qawl wal adu ya'tadi alayk. A sadiq or a friend is the one who is truthful towards you, and al adu is a man that, or a thing that, or a person that hurts you.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Habib. Let's take a break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
wanted to ask you the question about the other part of this principle that Brother Muzaffar kindly talked about, that part which was associated with enjoining the good. But what about forbidding the evil?
I think that this obligation, of course, you can separate, or you could distinguish the obligations that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has lawed or made laws into different. Some things are personal, individual laws. Mm-hmm. Some things go with society and come with society, such as zakat, such as khums. Zakat, of course, alms, and khums, which is also the fifth that you pay. The one-fifth of the money that you pay for the sadat and for the imam sahm. Imam sahm is sadat.
Right.
Now, the best example, like I said, would be for society obligations is al-amr al-ma'ruf wa nahy al-munkar. And one of the best reasons why, to answer your question, is that the bad apple, the rotten apple, if you put it with the good apples, it rots.
Right.
And as someone who bought apples for expensive price, me, and then put a bad apple between them and then lost all the apples. So the thing is that if you have one person that is, let's say, spoiled, rotten, it rots in society altogether. That is why we have hudud, capital punishments.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if someone does adultery, there are capital punishments specified for that person. Mm-hmm. Someone steals also. Why? When the people look, when the crowds come and look at the capital punishment, something happens to them. Mm-hmm. They have fear that this will be me one day if I do this. So they what? Stay away. Human beings are like rats.
It's just an example for the community, you mean?
Yeah, it's an example for the society. So when we forbid, we are doing it for the sake of our society and also the person that is being forbidden, the person that is being ordered for good. You have to keep it in mind that sometimes a nafs is very smart. A nafs is very, the shaitan is very clever also. Sometimes you forget. That you forget, it just takes one day to forget, even less. It takes a couple of seconds to forget, and then all of a sudden you slip. You forget. You're thinking, you know what's right, you know what's good, you know what's wrong. But sometimes it's not in your mind. Mm-hmm. It's not in your imagination that you're doing something wrong. This person could be advising you. He's doing good for you, right? So you have to be even more than just okay with it. You have to be thankful for that person that he's forbidding
exactly,
good.
Exactly, exactly.
So the forbidding part is very important for the sake of society. When you see, for example,
you need to purify the society.
You need to purify society because you can't live in a corrupt society. I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to put my son in a corrupt society. I don't want to put my daughter. I don't want to have this fear for my daughter when she goes out by herself, for example, in a corrupt society.
Nobody wants to put this.
Yeah, I'm just talking about myself because there might some people might argue for the sake of arguments.
I see, Brother Muzaffar, Brother Habib was very nicely talking about this important point: forgetfulness. When people tend to forget, because people are forgetful, you know? We individuals, we human beings are like, have it built in us, I guess. We are very much forgetful. Mm. And we need constant reminding.
Yeah, yeah.
Or remembrance that we have to do this, we have to do that, we should do this, we should do that, you know? But sometimes it is not the forgetfulness, it is the negligence in the sense that, you know, people don't know, or one particular individual doesn't know that his action is harmful to other people around him or her. And do you think that in this sense that I use the negligence for, the word negligence, again, we need to keep reminding the person who's doing the harmful act to the society, to the people around him or her, in fact, to come back and be corrected somehow.
So the Holy Quran says, "Fadhakkir inna ta'ata dhikra sayadhakkaru man yakhsha wa yatajannabuha al-ashqa." It says, so remind. Surely the reminder helps, it benefits. The one who fears will be benefited by it, and the one who has nothing to do with it, they won't be affected by it.
Yes.
But your job, your walifa, your duty is to remind them.
Exactly.
Now, when it comes
to... So much emphasis in the Quran on zikr.
Of course. Even the Quran itself is referred to as the zikr.
Exactly.
Right? Because in one sense, I mean, philosophically speaking, it's a really beautiful point. I just wanted to raise it, that we know the reality, we've just forgotten it, and so we need to be reminded of it. We know that, for example, our God is one. We know that we're going to be brought back to him. We know that this world is ending and we're going to go to the hereafter.
Mm-hmm.
We've just forgotten it. And sometimes we need that reminder. It's like exactly. when you're in a dream and you forget that you're dreaming.
Yes. And we're always forgetting our death. Just stay with us. Here sitting in the studio with two of my friends, Brother Muzaffar and Brother Habib. You need to invite people to the good, all right? Yeah. As if it needs some kind of a push.
And we forget our death, right? Even though every one of us knows we're going to die.
Saying of Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, whenever I remember it, you know, it just brings shivers on my spine. He saw people going behind the funeral,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden they start to laugh. Amir al-Mu'minin starts to say, وَكَأَنَّ الْمَوْتَ قَدْ كُتِبَ عَلَىٰ غَيْرِهِمْ, and that death has been written on other than them, and that there exactly. will not come a day where they will be underneath the soil, and that their money will be between the inheritors, and that their wives will get married, and that their houses will be sold, and that people will take away their
exactly.
their wealth and their property. It just reminds me that, oh my God, what am I doing? I'm putting all my energy for this worldly matter, for this dunya. If you want to hate the dunya, you want to remember death, just read the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
Exactly.
He knows how to yes. touch where it hurts. He knows yeah. he knows how touch to explain it. Yeah, he knows how to touch it. Salamullah alayka, Amir al-Mu'mineen. Azaqanallah ziyaratu. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala bless us with visiting his grave, inshallah ta'ala, in Najaf.
Ilahi ameen, inshallah.
And yeah, like how you said, we forget. There's a verse also in the Holy Quran that states that the human being in his nature forgets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Insan.
Yes.
What does insan
yes.
mean?
From nisyan.
Some say
yeah.
that
yeah.
it comes from nisyan, which
yeah.
means to forget. Our nature is forgetful.
Yeah.
That's how we've been hardwired
and
created.
Part of the other nature or the natural thing that characteristic that we have in all human beings, in addition to forgetfulness and negligence, is that we think, as you rightly mentioned, referring to the hadith from Amir al-Mu'minin, you know, peace be upon him, is that we think that everything else, as you mentioned, we are an exclusion. We are just an exception to the whole society or to other people. Like everything bad is going to happen, it's going to happen to other people and not us.
Yeah.
All right.
We're like the people in the theater, and we're just watching people's lives
yes.
go on, and everything catastrophe, everything bad, everything that happens to them is for them. And we're just sitting down, and we're living our lives, and we live for eternity. That's how
yes.
we feel.
And it becomes very much obvious when it comes to death.
It's a very interesting point. Yasin, Surah Yasin is
yes.
something that we often recite for those who are dead.
Yes.
Somebody passes away, what do we do? First thing we do is recite the 36th
yes.
chapter, Surah Yasin. We pop it out, we start
yes.
reciting it. One of the verses actually says, لِيُنذِرَكْ مَنْ كَانَ حَيَّةٌ. This book has been revealed to warn him who is?
Alive.
Alive.
Alive. Yes.
Right, so we're reading it, and often what the problem is, brother, is that we're reading it in Arabic and we're not understanding what we're reading.
Even Arabs,
and
my brother. Even us who study in Hausa sometimes, we kind of forget. I have to be honest about that. Or
yes.
sometimes we don't pay attention. And the Quran is a bahar. The Quran is an ocean,
mm-hmm.
a deep, 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 deep ocean. Unlimited knowledge is in it.
Yes.
We have to reflect. Every time you reflect, you can reflect about something else, about every verse.
Mm-hmm.
You stated this verse. The last time I reflected on that verse, I was thinking about knowledge. About knowledge
mm-hmm.
and jahal, of course, because
yes.
it has to do with the saying of Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam. So, yeah, we don't just say non-Arabs. That's what
yeah.
I want to say. So even Arabs sometimes don't, pay attention and reflect correctly.
And interestingly, we have a Persian proverb that talks about reciting the Yasin to the ears of the donkeys.
It is a saying.
It's very nice. It's very interesting because it connotes that, like, you are beating the air, because it's not gonna, like, your advice not gonna have any impact on the person you're talking to. Mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. But just because I know the conversation's veering off a little bit, I just want to quickly put this point in here. When it comes to Nahya Anil Munkar, you have to go and see what your marja says about it, because sometimes you have
the
to understand
the regulations that have to
yeah.
do with it.
You have to understand, is this thing that I'm going to do going to stop that evil from taking place or not?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sometimes it's not going to have any effect. Should you do it in that circumstance or not?
Mm-hmm.
You see, this requires more discussion and more contemplation.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Brother Muzaffar and Brother Habib, for joining us in the program Back to Reality on IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The hunger strike of six Palestinian prisoners who have refused to eat for days have once again brought the plight of Palestinian prisoners to attention. The six are on hunger strike to protest the illegal Israeli policy of administrative detention, demanding the occupying regime to either release them or prosecute them.
Israeli prison authorities refuse to deal with the hunger strikers' legal demands. Kaid al-Fusus has been on a hunger strike for over 82 days. Mehdad al-Ghawasmi for over 76 days, and both were transferred to Goplan Hospital. Ala al-Araj as well has been transferred to Al-Ramlis Clinic. Their health condition is deteriorating, but they insist to continue with their move to end their illegal detention.
In solidarity with the hunger-striking prisoners, Palestinians, including prisoners' families and relatives, have protested outside the building of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Ramallah. Here, every week, you'll see prisoners' mothers and wives holding the pictures of their beloved ones. They say they are the voice of the prisoners.
My son Mojahed went on a hunger strike and ended it after the Israeli authorities decided not to renew his administrative detention and to release him. Mojahed spent almost 10 years in jail, and then he was rearrested after 15 months of release. His administrative detention has been renewed 3 times. That's why he started the open-ended hunger strike. I know he was risking his life, but that was only for the hope that he could be released to live with us, his family, and to raise his only child.
Administrative detention is illegal, however. It's a tactic that allows Israeli authorities to put Palestinians behind bars indefinitely without charge or trial, claiming they were arrested based on secret reports which are inaccessible to prisoners themselves and their lawyers. Today, Israel holds 4,600 Palestinian prisoners in its jails, with 520 of them under the illegal administrative detention.
Despite repeated warnings about the hunger strikers' deteriorating health conditions, Israel has always been defiant in dealing with their legal demands to make sure that no more prisoner follows the same path in the future. Unfortunately, Israel ends the administrative detention only when hunger-striking prisoners are on the verge of death. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
Tensions between China and Taiwan have once again escalated after Taipei reported that 148 Chinese fighter jets flew over the island's air defense zone since Friday. That was the day Beijing marked the founding of the People's Republic of China with a military parade. Taiwanese government officials said they have to be on alert for China's, quote, military activities, while Taiwan's president Tsai Ing-wen said the island would do what it took to defend itself. This is China regards a self-ruled island, a breakaway province waiting to be reunited with the mainland. It maintains sovereignty over the region under the One China policy. However, Taiwan says it's an independent country and seeks help from the West, especially the United States, to boost its defense. Currently, the U.S. is Taiwan's largest weapons supplier, despite having no formal ties with the island. On Monday, China once again lashed out at the U.S. for selling arms to Taiwan and sending its warship to the Taiwan Strait. The foreign ministry described Washington's actions as provocative and irresponsible and urged it to stop bolstering Taiwanese separatist forces. Some experts believe the U.S. is hatching plot to further push Taiwan into secession from China.
The U.S. is trying to push the envelope as far as possible, trying all kinds of tactics and measures to push Taiwan forward as if it was a separate country without declaring its former status as a separate country.
The South China Sea is yet another bone of contention, with the U.S. routinely sending its warships, citing its right to freedom of navigation. The U.S. has no claim over the strategic waters, but it misses no chance to play with the sentiment of other countries having maritime stake over there. The U.K., a major U.S. ally, is also not far behind. Last week, London sent a warship through the Taiwan Strait for the first time since 2008. That, despite China's constant warning to the U.S. and its allies over such moves. For years, the U.S. and China have been at loggerheads over issues ranging from trade, Hong Kong and Taiwan, to the South China Sea. But ties between Beijing and Washington deteriorated sharply under former President Donald Trump. China had hoped for an improved relation under Trump's successor. But since taking office, Joe Biden has maintained pressure on China, showing no sign of discontinuing on his predecessor's hardline policies. Biden is even seeking new alliances to counter China's rising influence in the region and beyond.
This is a crisis that was said to have blown over. It was supposed to be a gradual return to full fuel tanks and drivers reassured that the very worst was behind them. Those in England's southeast continue to be hit especially hard, and despite army personnel now helping with the distribution of fuel to forecourts most in need, Business Secretary Kwasi Kwarteng denied the UK was at crisis point.
The last few days have been difficult. We've seen large queues, but I think the situation is stabilising. We're getting petrol into the forecourts.
For consumers, the minister's words may well ring hollow.
I just think it's embarrassing that, again, we live in the UK, that we have to get the army to drive trucks. So, yeah, ridiculous, ridiculous. I think it's what we just get used to now, isn't it? I mean, that's just how it is. This government's terrible. Preceding governments have been just as bad. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, this shouldn't be happening in the UK today.
You should bring in foreign help, I mean workers from abroad who actually know how to drive lorries and to carry the fuel to the pump stations.
UK is a very big country and very rich country and a developed country. All this mess should not be like in your life since day one. So I really don't understand all this mess, really.
It should have been business as usual at these pumps, but for many drivers, they'll be wondering whether or not their reality is being matched by the rhetoric coming out of Downing Street, and worse still, if this is a shape of things to come. The government's had to admit that one of the solutions touted to alleviate the crisis, relaxing the visa rules for experienced EU HGV drivers, has underperformed.
What we said to the road haulage industry was, fine, give us the names of the drivers that you want to bring in and we'll sort out the visas. We've got another 5,000 visas. They only produced 127 names.
The worry is that this fuel issue becomes a crisis of confidence in Britain's ability to deliver the basics for its citizens. This might leave more of a damaging legacy than the government cares to admit. Amina Taylor, London.
As the humanitarian crisis looms in Afghanistan, Yaron's new shipment of humanitarian aid to Afghan people containing tons of foodstuffs has arrived in Kabul. This round of Iranian aid was handed over by Iranian Red Crescent Society in cooperation with its Afghan partner.
The Iranian Red Crescent Society, in cooperation with the Red Crescent Society of Afghanistan, has sent the first consignment, which is including the 50 metric tons of the humanitarian consignment, mainly the food items, including the rice, canned beans, and as well as the macaronis and other sugar and other food items which is necessary for the people in Afghanistan.
These aids are provided amid the rising hunger as a result of political crisis and the blockade of Afghans' assets by the U.S. Afghans and aid groups believe that the country wouldn't face the ongoing crisis if the U.S. had not frozen its assets.
We thank Iran and other countries who are helping Afghans these days. Our main concern is U.S. sanctions that are pushing people to unprecedented hunger and poverty. The U.S. and other countries must consider humanitarian needs and separate it from political issues. Many countries want to send money to the people of Afghanistan, but can't do that due to sanctions.
Our situation is really dire. I have lost my job and I don't receive my salary anymore. I urge international countries to help poor Afghan people who have nothing to eat these days. Some are displaced and live on the streets.
2 decades of war have left Afghanistan impoverished. The U.S.-led war in the country came to an end in August when all foreign forces left Afghanistan. Afghanistan is faced with a multitude of crises. Health clinics are closing down, while rampant inflation is treating people who have been left with little money and food. All that's against the backdrop of Afghanistan's frozen assets abroad. In such circumstances, assistance from the international community, especially the neighboring countries, will be a welcome relief for millions of Afghans. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
With the second shipment of Iranian fuel already making its way to most Lebanese areas, the electricity crisis has somewhat been lifted. Private generators and companies have welcomed the initiative by Hezbollah to bring in Iranian fuel through Syria.
We are buying diesel oil for a lower price. We are also buying it in Lebanese lira, and this fuel is for all sects and all religions.
Despite some criticism from foes of Hezbollah, the general response has seen the fuel as a form of humanitarian aid.
Lebanon's need for this fuel and the method with which Hezbollah distributed the fuel to all sectors and all factions in Lebanon has helped to strengthen the Lebanese society and its sovereignty. Hezbollah had been very careful not to negatively impact Lebanon in any way when it came to security and maintaining the unity of Lebanon, which is our priority. And so it was a very significant backup for Lebanon when it needed it the most.
Hezbollah Secretary General stressed previously that a bigger portion of this fuel will be distributed as donations.
This is one of the major petroleum stations in Lebanon, which was affected by the crisis. Today, it is the main distributor of Iranian fuel in the country. Several Al-Amana stations across Lebanon are responsible for the distribution of gas, either free or selling with a price cheaper than the market.
Experts believe there's more to the import of fuel from Iran than meets the eye.
This convoy of ships has proven that at any time when the Americans exit the region, there can be an alternative. And this alternative is not only military and political, it is also economic. And this is the upcoming challenge for our country and our communities. Even the U.S. and its agents have understood that the issue is not merely an issue of providing fuel, but that there is an alternative lead by the Islamic Republic of Iran in alliance and cooperation with all the countries in the region to free its economies instead of being under the U.S. hegemony.
Hezbollah has also noted that this initiative will not cover all hours of electricity, but that there needs to be reforms in the electricity sector, while some of the gasoline shortage should be met with the arrival of a third Iranian ship. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.